Network. Good evening, everybody. I'm Roger Lajoie. Quite a World Series game in the books and a dominating performance by the L.A. Dodgers to take a 2-1 series lead. We'll have some post-game reaction for you in our next hour. We'll hear from, we'll hear from Mookie Betts and Kevin Cash. How about that? Their reaction to Game 3 of the World Series. Nice to have you with us. You can drop an email, roger@sportsnet590.ca. Text 590-590 if you'd like to weigh in, give a comment on the World Series. Or you can do it on Twitter at @TheRog590. And speaking of Twitter, we have a poll up on Twitter. And earlier, it was up. And I did it during the pregame when I joined you for the pregame. And votes are in. A lot of you don't care about this World Series, but a last-minute rally and the Dodgers win the poll. 35.9% of you say the Dodgers are going to win. 28.6% say the Rays, and 35.5% don't care. The TV ratings reflect that number of people who are perhaps not watching. I've said this over and over again. I'm watching more sports as a result of the pandemic, not less. And it isn't just in my role as a sports broadcaster. I think the distraction has been great. But I can understand the way it is with other people and how you're feeling about it. And if you're not a Jays fan, do you really want to watch the Rays and the Dodgers? So thanks for voting in. We'll read your comments a little later. My producer, Shoah Lee, is going to join me in a couple of minutes, and we'll get his thoughts on the game tonight. And we'll have that post-game audio. And Jerry Howarth was on the station earlier, the great Jerry Howarth, talking about, of course, the 27th anniversary of the Joe Carter home run. And I've quickly got to tell you my story. Everyone says, well, where were you? You know, younger crowd. Oh, Raptors, I'll never forget. I was with my parents, or I was at the bar, or I was in California at the game, or wherever the case it was when they won. Historical moment. So I am working in 1993, Sportsnet 1430, the fan. No, pardon me, it wasn't Sportsnet. It was Fan 1430. Toronto's all sports station. That was what we were called. We had been on the air for 1 year. 1 year. And October 27th, 1993, I was working as part-time host here at the station, as I still do to this day. And I was also working for United Press International as a stringer. One of, I think we had six people covering that World Series, and I was one of them. I was not the lead writer because I was sitting in the football press box, which was in the outfield stands. And the extended football press box also had some extra seats below, as you'll see at many World Series events. So that's where I'm located. So I am facing home plate from a long way out. Bottom of the ninth, a lot of people forget the Blue Jays had a 5-1 lead in that game, and they blew it. Philly scored 5 runs in the top of the seventh to make it 6-5. We go to the bottom of the ninth inning. No cell phones in those days. Our phone, though, and we had a phone at our location, rings, and it's my boss who's sitting in the baseball press box, and he says, all right, I'm going to go over the post-game assignments. I want you and Steve and, you know, the other guys who were there. Two of you are going to go to the home team dressing room, and the other two are going to go to the visiting team dressing room. And so, you know, we're trying to figure that out, and Ricky Henderson comes up, 4 pitches, he walks. So we're getting our assignments. You're going, well, and then, you know, hey, is the game even going to end? Is it going to go to extra innings or whatever? Devon White flies out. So now there's one out, runner at first, and the conversation is almost over. Then Paul Molitor quickly gets a single, and we got runners at first and second. So runners at first and second, one out, Mitch the Wild Thing Williams on the mound for the Philadelphia Phillies. And any reliever whose nickname is Wild Thing, you know you got a chance of getting some hits off him. He was actually a very good reliever. But he had a penchant for being wild, hence the nickname. Regardless, so I'm trying to confirm with the boss, because the crowd noise is really getting loud, and I say, okay, so we're going to go to the winning dressing room, and you guys are going to the losing dressing room, and we're doing the assignments, and then Carter hits the homer. The ball comes right towards us into our area. We see it drop into the stands and couldn't hear another thing. The conversation, you could not talk on the phone. It was too noisy. Tried to get under the table with the phone to hear him. Couldn't hear him. We just said, let's go down. We'll just go downstairs and figure it out. And later that night, my great buddy, Storman Norman Rumack, was hosting a show here. I came on with him. And Tim Haffey, great reporter, was at the ballparks, then Skydome, and joined us talking about it. And it is still the greatest individual sports moment I've ever seen live. And I'm really fortunate. I have seen a lot of great sports moments in my career. I've been to 17 World Series, 14 Super Bowls, 13 NBA Finals, 13 Stanley Cup Finals. So I've covered a lot of events. Nothing beats it. Nothing. It's not, nothing even close. And that was the first World Series I ever attended in 1993. So I'll never forget that. You got a memory about it, let us know. Text us at 590-590. Email Roger at sportsnet590.ca or on Twitter at the Rog590. But definitely a great moment in Toronto sports history. And Jerry Howarth was on earlier talking about it. And we will hear from Jerry later. We're going to hear from Show Ali, our producer, also host here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan, get his thoughts on the World Series tonight. And Show, hardly a dramatic game, but an important one for the LA Dodgers. It looks like all those years of playoff failures for the Dodgers, I'm getting the feeling it might be coming to an end here, Show. They're looking pretty good.
Immediacy of this game ending, Raj, on Twitter was from Bill Shaken from the Los Angeles Times, and he actually was on The Fan earlier today as well, I think with Blair on Writer's Block, and he was talking about the Dodgers and how 1988 is looked at in Los Angeles, and he tweeted, the Dodgers lead the World Series 2-1 for the first time since 1988. So, yeah, I think you might be onto something there. I think I get the sense that, obviously I'm not from L.A., but I get the sense that on the West Coast, 1988 is, at least for Dodgers fans, they treat it very similarly to the Leafs fandom treating 1967. So I'm sure they're very excited, but holding their breath, I'm sure, as well.
Well, hey, the New York Rangers fans used to chant 19... Well, the people that hated the New York Rangers used to chant... Right. Used to chant 1940 before they won the cup in 1944. And by the way, the Rangers have won one Stanley Cup in 80 years. So it's not just the Dodgers that are struggling, but I see it as this year's Show, because the difference between them and the Rangers and the Leafs and other teams in droughts and everything else, and 32 years is a long time, but my goodness, we saw the Red Sox and the Cubs in the last, two decades win World Series after 198-year droughts and 86-year droughts, and the White Sox were 88 years. It isn't so much the time with them. It's a number of times in the last 8 years, they probably and should have and could have won the World Series, including losing to Houston. And as we all know now, how, you know, the legal stuff that happened in that with the Astros stealing signs, could have beaten Boston. That was a great series. And they had playoff disappointments. And you just keep knocking on the door and Show. They remind me of the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Washington Capitals in hockey. They're just banging on the door, banging on the door. At some point, when you've got a great team like that every year, it's your turn. The series is not over. Of course, Tampa Bay could come back, but I'm just getting the feeling watching them, especially Show, that they came back from a 3-1 deficit. And that leads them, I think, to believe, you know what, this is. Roberts, the manager, even said it after the NLCS, this is our year. I'm kind of thinking it is.
Yeah, I mean, in a 60-game season, the Dodgers were so unstoppable. It seemed like even before the 60-game season started, Raj, the Dodgers had already penciled their spot in for the playoffs, even at the beginning of the year. And obviously things happened, but for the Dodgers, it was a relatively uneventful year on their way to the number one seed overall in the NL. They basically rampaged through the first two rounds of the playoffs. And like you said, they ran into the Braves and had that 3-1 comeback. And it's funny to think that for a team as talented as the Los Angeles Dodgers, that they might actually have had some character building moments, some real inward prospective moments there where they learn what they're all about and what the guys in the clubhouse are about and the managing staff and you know, everyone from the top to the bottom, A to Z, because I don't think necessarily when you cruise through a season like that, maybe you already knew those things or you already learned those things, but sometimes it could be good, that kind of adversity in big moments. It could be really good for your squad, right? So I kind of agree with you. I think that there's always a chance that we know in sports there the craziest things happen, obviously, but I think there while there is a chance, it just the past couple of games, the past couple of wins I should say for the Dodgers have made it seem like they are just sucking the life out of Tampa Bay. Like tonight, for example, Raj, I mean, Walker Buehler just shut everything down. It was so uneventful, and I gotta feel that because of all the adversity they've faced so far, they're probably thrilled with that, I gotta imagine.
Totally agree. And another factor is, and again, it sounds like we're belittling the games, but the games really haven't been all that exciting. I mean, they're just now game two was good. Don't hear 6-4. It's still a good series, but it really is lacking that kind of drama. And you just wonder what answer Tampa Bay is going to have for that relentless Dodgers lineup. And Jessica Mendoza does a great job on ESPN, brought up a great point during the broadcast talking about the Dodgers put on display tonight all the different ways they can score. You know, homers, Mookie Betts steal a couple of bases. They can small ball you. They can do anything. They're almost unstoppable when they get going. And my point is that really describes this team for the last 8 years, because in the last eight seasons, you could make a strong argument the L.A. Dodgers have been the best team in baseball for maybe five or six of them. And they have, statistically, with wins. They've won the division every year. Every year they're there, and every year it's, there they go. It's time for them to break through, and we'll see if they do. But to Tampa, you can't sell them short. And show one thing is, you know, most teams, when they have a bullpen day coming up, that's a disadvantage. Tampa Bay invented that. So I won't write them off, but boy, they got to win game four. This series is done, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I think that I had seen that the announcement had come through that the starter for Game 4 tomorrow evening is Ryan Yarbrough. And I guess whether or not he was going to be the starter, as Dan and Chris Singleton and Jessica Mendoza said on the broadcast, he was going to be involved anyways, right? Like, he was going to be involved. A heavy dosage of Ryan Yarbrough was being prescribed by the Rays for Game 4. Absolutely no doubt whoever was on the mound to start. But it makes me wonder, given that, like you said, and I totally agree, the Rays obviously did invent the whole idea of a bullpen day, I wonder how long they expect Ryan Yarbrough to go, right? Because we know they have all the analytics, the computer saying, okay, well, this is the optimal time to keep a starter in and then take him out. Like, have him go through the order maybe twice, then you pull him immediately after the last batter of the order second time around, and you get someone else in there. If that's the case, I really do wonder how long Ryan Yarbrough is going to go, because he has been okay in the World Series. I think he's had one appearance so far in Game 1, I believe. But apart from that, I mean, it's been kind of uneventful for him as well. So I can't imagine he's going to go more than, what, two innings probably?
Tops. Oh, agreed. I even calling him a starter, he's just a glorified opener again. It's right. Going to be one of these things. Somebody has to start the game, so we call him a starter. I agree. However, Tampa seems to be, they're used to that. That's kind of their MO. So I don't think it's a huge disadvantage for them. But boy, when their ace, and Charlie Morton's been so good in the playoffs, gets knocked around, and he did tonight, you know, for the first time in this postseason, got knocked around pretty good, and the Dodgers were dealing, it's going to be a tough road for Tampa Bay. But here's hoping we get some great baseball games and a little drama as the series goes on. That's Shoa Lee. He's going to join me later in the show. We'll talk a little NFL and offseason hockey news, and we'll talk then, Shoa. Thank you.
Thanks, Raj.
That's Shoa Lee. We'll talk to him a little bit later in the show. We can talk to you as well. Twitter at the Raj 590, at the Raj 590. Email Roger at sportsnet590.ca or text 590-590. Name and location, please. If you're texting, if you have a memory of the 93 series or you want to talk about the 2020 World Series, you're welcome. And we'll read them throughout the course of the show. Later, Jerry Howarth was on Smith & Jones. We will play that for you, talking about that 93 World Series. But tonight, it was all the L.A. Dodgers. And when you talk about the L.A. Dodgers, you got to talk about their star performer, Mookie Betts. And here's his comments to media after the game.
Mookie, how much emphasis coming into this game are you guys putting on the odd number games, an opportunity to break that tie and once again resume this lead?
I mean, obviously you're trying to win every game, but we knew we had a tough task, you know, with Morton on the mound. So we just tried to scratch across a couple of runs. We were able to, you know, put some good swings on some pitches he left out over the plate. And, you know, we did a good job of grinding today.
We knew this was going to be a tough pitching match against Charlie Morton. How were you guys able to get to him effectively early on and knock him out in the fifth?
I think just, you know, following our plan. You know, we did a really good job as a unit following plans and swinging at good pitches, you know, swinging at hittable pitches. You know, he got the best of some of us, but, you know, we as a unit, we were able to, you know, grind through it.
Thank you.
And Mookie, you guys have scored 50 runs this postseason after there were two outs in an inning. It's a postseason record. How is that possible?
just not giving up. I mean, obviously there's two outs, but you can still build an inning. You know, not giving away at bats. I think, you know, that's just the recipe for that. And that's how you win a World Series. So we have to continue to do it for at least two more games.
How demoralizing is that to be on the other side, do you think?
I mean, I think, you know, being that I've been on the other side, it's tough to you're one out away, and then a walk here, and then a single here, and then a double here, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're giving up a couple runs. You know, it's kind of tough to stop the bleeding, but, you know, I think we did a good job in just keeping pressure.
Thank you.
Mookie, how much as a team do you guys value, you know, actually changing your approach with guys on base and shortening your swings that you guys just seem to do so well with guys in scoring position?
Yeah, I mean, it's not always about driving the ball. I think we've proven that we can do that, and we've proven that we can take our singles too. And, you know, there's a time and place to do both, and I think we've done a good job in kind of putting pride and whatnot to the side and putting the long ball to the side and just kind of playing pepper. You know, that sometimes that's the way to play the game.
Thanks.
Mookie, you know, I know this is important to everybody, but for Justin Turner, a guy who's been around for this team for such a long time, how meaningful is this for him to do all this and possibly win a World Series?
I mean, it's probably a question for him. You know, for me, it's, you know, I'm just happy to be in the clubhouse with him, actually get to spend some time with him. You know, I was always in another league, you know, watching from afar, and, you know, just seeing what he does each and every day is, you know, it's fun to be a part of.
Mookie, you know, Dave Roberts in recent years has kind of taken a lot of criticism every time this team has, you know, kind of failed to win the whole thing. Just kind of wondering, you know, how important has he been to this team, both from like a cultural standpoint, maybe even as from the strategic standpoint in these last couple of rounds?
I think he's been huge. He hasn't panicked. You know, I think he's been great. I think as players, we have to take some ownership in some of the plays, not always on him. You know, and you know, he's been the same guy. You know, even when we were down 3-1 against Atlanta, he still believed. He still was the same guy. He had no panic in him. And so, you know, you have to be grateful for that, you know, because you're quote-unquote leader. Is not panicking. He believes in you, and so that just proves that you should believe in yourself.
Thank you.
Hey, Mookie, two more steals tonight. Is this a point of emphasis for you personally or the team as a whole to maybe exploit something there?
Nah, I mean, I'm getting on base, and, you know, I'm able to get on base, and, you know, if it's there, I'll take it, you know, especially at a time like this. Every run is important. If I can get to second, you know, Siggs has been so hot. You know, all it takes is a single, and, you know, I'm scoring on that. So anything to scratch across a run is what I'm trying to do.
And from your vantage point, how did Walker look tonight?
Great. I mean, he was filling up the zone early. I know later on he, you know, kind of didn't lose it, but, you know, he threw a couple more balls. But early, you know, he gave us chances to keep adding on. He put up all, you know, so many zeros and only gave up one, so it's obviously a great outing. And you give up one run and give us the opportunity to score some runs and hold it. Yeah, I think we should win more games than that.
Thank you.
Mookie, you mentioned not needing to rely on the home run. Were you surprised when Dave called the squeeze play, and what did you see there?
I mean, I wasn't necessarily surprised. You know, I've seen it before, but Barnes has been swinging it. So either way, I think we would have been fine. And, you know, it was a perfectly executed, I don't know if it was a squeeze. I don't know what it's called, but I think it was Barnes did an amazing job with that bunt right there.
Mookie Betts has done an amazing job both in the field and now in the World Series at the plate, and certainly a leading contender to be the World Series MVP. But a lot of baseball still to be played. It's only 2-1 in the series, but kind of feels like a bigger deficit for Tampa Bay. Maybe that's just me. Mookie Betts after the game as the Dodgers beat the Rays 6-2 to take a 2-1 lead in the Fall Classic. Kevin Cash is a guy, though, that's not going to quit. He's going to find a way to get his team back into this series. I'm pretty confident in that, too. And he talked to reporters after what had to be a disappointing Game 3 for his Rays.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Mark.
What was the biggest difference with Charlie? You've seen him so good in the postseason before, and it looked like a lot of the damage tonight was two outs and two strikes.
That's about it right there. Just, you know, they made him, his execution and two strike counts, went a little bit sideways on him. Competed really, really well. They put a lot of pressure on him. You know, the home run right there to Turner, it looked like he was just trying to go backdoor sinker, but it leaked over the middle with two strikes. Then the next inning, a lot of that started with a hit by pitch to Seager. And then same thing with Barnes when he had a two strike count on him and left the ball that he could handle. And when you're facing a guy like Buehler, what we saw today, there's really no margin of error. And they got us today.
Gotcha. And then just you've bounced back many times this year. That everything's magnified in the World Series. Knowing Kershaw is looming in Game 5, what's the sense of, urgency tomorrow?
Well, we need to find a way to win, that's for sure. I mean, I don't think any of us are concerned with Kershaw right now. We need to be concerned with Urias. He's pretty talented too. But go out there and get some good at-bats going early on. See if, we seem to be a much better club when we get early leads. That makes a lot of sense. So whatever we can do to get some runs early on.
Hey, Kevin. Charlie has been so good in the postseason. I don't want to say this was bound to happen, but, I mean, is it almost shocking to you to see him have struggles when he's just been so dominant for you over the past five starts in October?
Yeah, I mean, he set the bar as high as anybody in the game right now in postseason success, off the mound. So you hate to say shocking because that's unfair to Charlie. I think – a couple pitches here or there he'd like to have back. We'd like to have back just to keep us in it a little bit longer. But so appreciative of Charlie's, the presence in the clubhouse, what he does, the that mentality that he just naturally provides our clubhouse when we know we get to hand him the ball. And if we'll get another opportunity at it in Game 7, Game 3 is not going to change any way we feel about him.
You mentioned having the small margin of error. How difficult is that when you've got a guy like Buehler on the mound against you and you fall behind by that many runs? I mean, that he looked pretty unhittable in the early going.
Yeah, well, he was. He was outstanding. I mean, you can see the fastball just popping through the zone. Spun a couple breaking balls, but other than just a few breaking balls here or there, it was very much a here it is, hit it approach, and you totally understand and appreciate why he's so talented and, destined probably for a lot of success. I mean, he's got a really special fastball that just gets on hitters, and he commands it well.
Kevin, after Game 2, you mentioned how, Brandon can be streaky, and you're hoping that would – get the offense going. And you just mentioned it. Was this more about Walker, or did you have some issues with your at-bats? Did you like the at-bats, even though Walker was that good?
No, I you got to give credit to Walker. 100% him. We see it. We're fortunate to see it quite a bit when our pitching's on and we go against good offenses and the pitching is on, we're going to have a lot of wins. And I think that's what we saw on the flip side today. With him, I mean, it was just dominant stuff.
Hey, Kevin. Obviously, Kevin not losing effort, but Randy kind of setting the bar high again, tying some pretty impressive members of Barry Bonds being one of them. Is this just kind of Randy?
Yeah, I mean, real, still no explanation for it. I've heard some of the names that he is tied with or passing, and that's pretty special territory. I mean, you look at a guy like Derek Jeter and his career, and then you add the postseason. I mean, it's remarkable what he's done. And, Randy hasn't had the opportunities, but he certainly has made the most of it in his first chance. And, we're not having the success we've had to date without his production. We were all happy for him to get the big home run there.
No, it's not in the situation that Shane would want, but he comes in and makes another good-looking debut this time in the World Series. How important is that, not only for him in this series, but just going forward in his career to have such a big moment like that?
Pretty big. I mean, I was thinking about it when he was out on the mound. I mean, you check the box right there, or he checked the box that he hasn't pitched in AAA yet, but he's pitched in the World Series. and he hasn't pitched in a regular season game in the big leagues. So I think this is great for him. I was really thrilled that, you know, they battled him really, really well. His pitch count got a little higher than you want for, you know, three or four batters face, but he stayed at it and threw strikes. Very encouraged with Shane.
Yeah, we don't see too many safety squeezes or any squeezes anymore in the game. What was your reaction to that play? Did it surprise you a bit?
No, it didn't surprise us. It made sense. We've done it in the past. It's when you execute it like they did, it's really tough to defend. There was no surprise. G-Man did everything right. You know, Rodney was yelling at him that there was a possibility that happened before the at-bat. Barnes showed first pitch and they put it right back on. He got it down, and you know, and it's really tough to defend. So just a very well executed play on their part.
That's just another factor that makes you think it's a Dodgers year. That's kind of like, that's how Tampa Bay does it. Squeeze. I mean, who does that anymore? Well, Tampa Bay does it. Well, the Dodgers did it to them tonight. In addition to the home run power, and listen, they've got Clayton Kershaw lined up to pitch game five. Tomorrow night's game four, which you'll hear right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, certainly in the must-win category now for Tampa Bay on what will be a bullpen day for them, which is not that bad a thing for the Rays. Kevin Cash giving his comments after the World Series game tonight. Coming up, the comments of the great Jerry Howarth on this very special day in history. 27 years ago, Joe Carter touched them all, and Jerry Howarth talks about it earlier on Smith and Jones. You'll hear that next as Sportsnet tonight continues. I'm Roger Lejoie on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Radio Network, Roger Lejoie with you until 1 o'clock. CBS Sports Radio will keep you company overnight. I'll join you again Sunday between 5 and 7:30, and we have World Series games Saturday night and Sunday night, because that's what we do here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, games 4 and 5. You heard game 3, Dodgers winning. Show Arlie, my producer, and I will talk a little bit more. Well, we'll talk mostly NFL and some Leafs before we leave you on the show. We'll leave the World Series aside for the moment, but we'll talk about the 1993 World Series now, or at least listen in to the 1993 World Series. The legendary Jerry Howarth, for many years, decades, of course, one of the voices of the Blue Jays, and what a tremendous man and voice Jerry Howarth has. He was on Smith and Jones earlier on the 27th anniversary of the Joe Carter touch-em-all home run.
It was 27 years ago today, that Joe Carter hit the game-winning, World Series-winning home run off Mitch Williams. And to talk about that very moment, perhaps none better than the man who called the games for so long on this radio station, the longtime voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, Jerry Howarth. Jerry, how are you today?
Very good, Eric and Paul. Thanks for having me on, and what a moment for Joe, what a moment for all of us, and seems like yesterday.
Yeah, it really does. And earlier in the week, Jerry, Jonesy and I, we had a chance to chat with Ed Sprague, who relived 28 years ago to the day when he hit his big home run in the first World Series in 92, the big one, of course, off Jeff Reardon. One of the things he spoke to us about, Jerry, was the calmness that he felt in approaching the plate. He said he had just had a lengthy conversation with Rance Mullinix, kind of going over his approach against Reardon, and he stepped up and he said it might have been one of the most calm at-bats I'd had in my career. I wonder what it was like for Joe in that moment, in 93, with all the marbles on the line. He takes the swing and belts that one out, and boom, history is made. I wonder what's going through Joe's mind at that point.
Well, I think what you just said here really marks a professional, and the real good ones. Slow it down, be in a position where you don't have the nerves. Of course, it's always part of the game anyway to begin with. But the more you can slow down your emotions and your adrenaline, the better you're going to be. And Ed talked to you about that, and it was so true. I think the same was true for Joe. It's funny, for that at-bat, Tom was up in the booth calling it. I was down near the dugout to do the post-game interview. And immediately when the count went to 1-2 from Mitch Williams, I said to myself, Jerry, who are you going to interview for the game to get ready for Pat Henkin's start tomorrow? Which Philly will it be, or maybe a Blue Jay, to talk about the intensity of this game? And on the very next pitch, he hits one down the left field line. Everybody's holding their breath, and then it's gone. And I think, to answer your question specifically, you couldn't have had a better person up there than Joe, because he'd gone through so many things in his career, and he was relaxed. And he also knew, too, that he could solve Mitch Williams. Part of that situation came earlier in the inning. When they went to the bottom of the ninth inning, Ricky Henderson was in the dugout, and he looked out in right field, and they opened the door, the bullpen door. Out came Mitch Williams. Ricky got up. He went to the far end of the dugout toward the home plate side, and he started to come down with his palms up, high-fiving and low-fiving everybody in the dugout, and he said, we're going to win this. He's going to walk me on four pitches, and we're going to win this World Series. That's exactly what happened. Ricky led off. Mitch threw him four pitches out of the zone. That's why they called him the Wild Thing. And then I think Joe, because of part of that environment that was already set by Ricky, he went up there and stepped into that historic pitch.
Wow, Jerry, that great, great, terrific insight. I'm sure that a lot of, maybe some of our young listeners who weren't even around. I mean, if you're born in anywhere, you know, like my kids, 97, 2000, 2003, 99, 2003, they don't have that kind of insight. What do you remember about, I mean, we're in such different times now, Jerry. What do you remember about the energy of the building on that night?
Well, it was unbelievable, so explosive. And then there were a few things, too, that come to mind regarding that, and maybe people who, as you referred to your kids or whatever, weren't that familiar with what was going on or read about it. So not only was it electric after Joe hit the home run, but my wife Mary is sitting next to his mom, and so all of a sudden when he hits the home run, there's Joe jumping up and down on the way to first base, hoping that it's going to be fair, which he knew it was. And then Joe's mom says to Mary, my son, the kangaroo. It was so funny when she said that, and it certainly fit. And then upstairs, Tom Cheek made his most memorable call. It was, touch them all, Joe. You'll never hit a bigger home run in your life. And I've always told young sportscasters, be spontaneous. Don't rehearse anything.
Yes.
So when I asked Tom about that later, he said, Jerry, when I saw Joe jumping up and down going to first base, my first thought was, Joe, don't jump over the first base bag and miss it. They'll take away that game-winning World Series home run. That's why I said, touch them all, Joe. You'll never hit a bigger home run.
Talking to Jerry Howarth, you know, Jerry, I love hearing these stories, and I'll tell you, Jonesy, I think you and I have discussed this at some point. You know, we, of course, Paul and I had the pleasure last year of the Raptors, you know, run to the championship and calling games on various networks and whatever else, and Jonesy had the incredible call of the Kawhi Leonard shot and bouncing around four rims and going down, and then he and I had a chance to call the game together for game six of the championship. And I will say, I've always heeded that advice. I know I've spoken to you over the years about this and other broadcasters as well. I've never written stuff down, but the one thing I did write down going into game six, not knowing if the Raptors would win, and Jonesy, I think I told you this, I had to write this down, whether it got used in game six or whether, you know, Jonesy ended up doing it in game seven, whatever it might be, I just knew I couldn't say for the first time ever, you know, coming north of the border, because that was the one thing, I thinking back to just as a fan to 92, to divert from the Joe Carter conversation for a second, I remember 92 and the World Series being won, it was for the first time ever, you know, the World Series flag will fly north of the border. And yes. With the whole We the North campaign that the Raptors have had the last almost 10 years now, and flying the We the North flag and flying the Canadian flag, I wanted to be sure that in that moment, there was no repetition from the baseball call the first time the World Series traveled north of the border. And I found it difficult in sitting there thinking, I don't know what words will find me in the moment, but I want to make sure that it's not just a carbon copy of what happened in baseball, you know, almost 30 plus years ago.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. And as you say that, Eric, I start to think, too, about that shot by Kawhi against the Sixers. And it took me back to 1980 when Al Michaels was doing the hockey, and the U.S. beat Russia, and Al said, "A miracle on ice." Well, I coached basketball up here for 25 years, the last 20 at Etobicoke Collegiate. And when I saw the shot from the other end hit the front of the rim, I said, well, that's too bad. They're not going to win this one. And whenever a shot hits the front of the rim, it goes backwards and from where it came. And all of a sudden, talk about a miracle on the court, it hits the front rim, goes up over the basket, comes down on the far end of the rim, goes up and down again, and falls through. And that's why I think being spontaneous and letting it all play out, you never know what's going to happen. And that shot by Kawhi, I thought that had no chance of going in, and look what it did.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, it's funny because all three of us in the profession, and, you know, my brother Mark has always kind of said what Eric said, the words will find you at the right time. When I look at the Blue Jays run, probably from about 85, Jerry, to 94, and I look at the Raptors run, they've got, I believe now with San Antonio missing the playoffs, I believe certainly in the East, they have the longest running playoff streak going. When you look at building it over that time period, can you draw any parallels, Jerry? I know you were in the booth baseball-wise, but you're a basketball coach and you watch the game closely. Can you draw any parallels between the way the Jays mounted their run and then the way the Raptors mounted theirs, both of them ultimately to the championship?
Yes, I can. It goes back to your president and GM who runs the organization, down to Nick Nurse, and that goes back to Pat Gillick, who's in the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown for a reason, and this is what happened. When Pat took over, and they had those beginning years, 82, 83, 84, finally, in 85, they win 99 games, and they're on their way to 11 straight seasons of playing better than 500 ball. But they didn't win it all until 92 and 93. I often said up in the booth and publicly, the real competition is not down on the field. It's among the general managers. It's among the people who acquire the talent for the manager to then, with the coaches, go out there and let them play, at the same time make them better and develop the farm system. But
Jerry Howarth from Smith & Jones earlier today. Great to hear Jerry's voice. Iconic, one of a kind. And interesting question, Jones. He asked him about comparing Raptors and Jays. It's what Sho and I were talking about earlier in the program, about the Dodgers just coming and eventually you break through. Well, that's what happened. The Raptors didn't win overnight, as we all know. All those playoff losses and six division titles in a row, and LeBron wipes them out, and oh, they're never going to win, and then they win. You get the same feeling with this year's Dodgers team, but we shall see. Like I said, lots to go still in this World Series. Jerry Howarth with Smith & Jones, and great to hear the legendary Jerry Howarth on our airwaves again. Sportsnet tonight continues. Roger Lajoie, Sho Ali will join me, and we'll talk some NFL for a couple of minutes at the top of the hour. That's coming up next on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Roger Lajoie with you until the top of the hour. CBS Sports Radio coming up overnight. I'll join you again Sunday between 5 and 7:30 right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network with Josh Goldberg will be with me, and we'll talk about the Bills after the Bills game on Sunday. And aren't they an interesting team? And speaking of the NFL, our producer tonight, Sho Ali, who does his usual great job and hosts many times on the station, a lot of times with Josh, joins me now to talk about this week and the big news. Antonio Brown in a Tom Brady reunion show. What do you think of that?
I got to say, Raj, when I saw that news kind of trickle out between all the various NFL insiders earlier today, I was pretty surprised, because the kind of accompanying news that came with that was that Brady was the one who had been apparently privately campaigning and privately lobbying for Antonio Brown to join the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think there was some news also coming out that he had apparently like contacted Antonio Brown's agent and some of his friends in order to get, you know, get a good line into Antonio's kind of head in order to get him to get things right with his own life. Like it was a very, very multi-pronged, multifaceted approach for Brady to get AB right so he could rejoin him in Florida, in Tampa Bay specifically. It was such a fascinating story because I honestly, if you had told me a couple of months ago that AB was never going to play football in the NFL again, I probably would have agreed with you.
I agree too. I don't think he can get inside Antonio Brown's head. I think that's impossible. But let's talk about Brady in Tampa Bay. And I don't know, Sho, and maybe it's just Brady. And I know you've been a big Pats fan all your life. And I admire Brady and the Pats and what they accomplished there. And listen, they're 4-2, and Brady's numbers are pretty good. And, you know, so it looks like it's going okay. And you'd think they're only going to get better once they get more familiar with each other. But then when I hear this and you're going out to get Antonio Brown, I'm just wondering, what is your feeling? Is Tom Brady liking it in Tampa Bay? Is this going to be a fit for maybe another year or two or three? Brady says he wants to play at least 45. Or is this going to end badly? You got any crystal ball thoughts on that?
Oh, man, I honestly, at the beginning of the year, I think I would have probably been pretty comfortable in saying that, let's say, the Buccaneers were going to miss the playoffs this year, and Brady would just think, oh, okay, well, that's it for me. I'm going to retire. But given what they've done to some pretty good teams, I mean, just last week, they completely dismantled Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, and Rodgers had been slinging it. He had been on fire lately. And again, I think you can probably credit a lot of that to the Tampa Bay defense, which is a pretty stingy unit. But with Brady, from Brady's perspective, I mean, if he can continue being surrounded by guys like, and again, even if the AB thing doesn't work out, if he can continue being surrounded by Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. He has obviously Gronk, his safety blanket there, and he had a pretty decent game last week. Other guys like Cameron Brate, O.J. Howard, I think, is on injured reserve now, but Cameron Brate's still a pretty good, great guy for him to throw to. Scotty Miller as well. Like, he has more weapons in Tampa Bay than he probably had in New England for the past, I guess if you want to maybe extend it out to maybe like 2010, let's say, or maybe even, let's say 2015, actually, if you want to go that far, which is, again, 5 years, but guy, all pros like Mike Evans and so on. If he can keep those guys healthy, I see no reason why he would think he's going to hang it up. Because if there's one thing about Brady that everyone seems to agree on, is that he has the competitive fire of some maniacal 25-year-old, it seems like.
Oh, I don't think Tom Brady, well, obviously he retires at some point. I think injury will take him out before it's a conscious decision. I really do. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because, first of all, he's in fantastic shape. He wants to keep playing as long as he's still competitive. I just don't, you know, hope we see a time where Tom Brady is playing full seasons and throwing for 2,300 yards and, you know, just becomes a kind of mediocre quarterback and limps to the end. But just this whole Antonio Brown thing just makes me wonder. I just wonder how much he's liking it there. And, of course, he'll like it a lot more if Tampa Bay keeps winning. And 4-2 is a pretty good start for them. So let's talk about some of the games coming up. You talked about the Packers. I want to talk about them. They have what appears to be a very easy game playing the Texans. But, boy, this has to be a bounce-back game for them because – did they really get exposed last week as maybe not being that good? Because then I think in the first 4 weeks of the season, Sho, everyone was saying that, well, the start of the season, people were saying, the Packers, they lost to San Francisco. They got the quarterback in the draft. They had a miserable draft. People were down on them. Then the first 4 weeks, what's not to like? Aaron Rodgers looks great. They're rolling. They get decimated, as you already mentioned, last week. I think they need a bounce back win here today, maybe just for confidence sake and kind of restore order a little bit.
Yeah, facing the Houston Texans this week. And yeah, it's funny, right, Raj? Because this time, maybe a little later than this time, but last year, you and I had a very similar discussion about the Green Bay Packers. And is Aaron Rodgers done? And what are they going to do to supplement him in the draft? And like you kind of laid it out all right there. It was all pretty negative on Rodgers. And after what we saw the Buccaneers defense do to him last week, I do agree with you that I think he's going to come out with a lot of fire. It's just they have also been dealing with a lot of injuries as well, right? Like, I mean, Devontae Adams Adams just came back, his number one guy in that offense, wide receiver, came back from a pretty lengthy layoff in terms of a nagging injury that had been bugging him all season. Looks like Aaron Jones, his top running back, is questionable to play, and Aaron Jones is quite the weapon for him. So if he doesn't play on the road, I should say, in Houston to take on the Texans, I mean, the Texans have been playing a lot better since they got rid of Bill O'Brien and Romeo Crennel has taken the reins there for Houston. So I still think the Packers are probably going to be favored in more games than they're not, but I have a feeling that a lot of people seem to be thinking this is going to be a really high-scoring game, but I feel like this might actually have the makings of a relatively low-scoring game, given that both squads are kind of dealing with some inconsistencies for the Texans and some injuries for the Packers.
Bills and Jets will be on our station, and of course the Bills are the team of a lot of people in Southern Ontario. The Josh Allen MVP train has come to a bit of a stop in the last 2 weeks. It doesn't really diminish what he did in the first 4 weeks of the season. But now, and that's just the way life is, when you're rolling in the NFL, a few question marks come up. They've got an even easier game with the horrific New York Jets. But again, just kind of like the Packers, the Bills want to restore that confidence.
Yeah, this is going to be one of those, you know, classic quote-unquote get-right games for the Buffalo Bills. I have no doubt about it. You mentioned the Josh Allen MVP train has come to a stop. I think it'll get going again in a couple of weeks here, because you got to remember, Raj, I mean, they played the two teams they lost to. Yeah, they weren't pretty losses, that's for sure, but they lost to essentially the two teams that were in the AFC Championship game last year, and one of those two teams went on to win the Super Bowl. So I still think a lot of people would probably agree that in the AFC, the pecking order probably goes something like, Kansas City, Baltimore, Tennessee, Pittsburgh. But if you put the Bills at number five right after them, I don't think they're going to be a whole ton of arguments despite the last ugly two losses there.
No, and first in their division, which is the big thing.
Right.
We got about a minute. Fast comment on the Leafs. Travis Dermott gets a contract extension. They're taking care of business. They brought in all those players, five players, $4.8 million. Simmons, Spezza re-signing. Joe Thornton. Good work by Kyle Dubas?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think I saw Chris Johnson tweet this out, and I thought he summed it up pretty well. They basically signed or re-signed Mikheyev, Simmons, VC, Thornton, Spezza, and Boyd for less money they owed Janssen and Kapanen, and they signed Brody, Bogosian, and Lettinen for less money they paid CC and Barry last season. So if that's what the math, the balance works out to be, I think that's a great win for Toronto Maple Leafs.
Especially since they have so much money locked up, as we all know, in their top players 100%. Show, great stuff. Thanks. We'll talk again soon. Keep up the great work, buddy.
Talk to you later, Raj.
Thank you, sir. That's Show Ali, our producer. Thanks to him. Danielle Furtado, our board op. Thank you, Danielle. Great job as always. And thanks to all of you for listening in. Follow me on Twitter anytime at TheRaj590, at TheRaj590. I'll join you again Sunday between 5 and 7:30. CBS Sports Radio is coming up. Our great lineup of Saturday shows leading you into Game 4 of the World Series tomorrow night, Game 5 on Sunday, and if necessary, we'll also bring them Tuesday and Wednesday night right here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Have a great night, everybody. Thanks for listening to Sportsnet tonight. I'm Roger Lajoie. Talk to you on Sunday right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Roger Lajoie.
It's done! See you later!
Roger Lajoie.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Good night, everybody.